Pete Yost here for the Unbuild It podcast. Want to give a quick word about our sponsor, Huber Engineered Woods, their booth at the International Builder Show 2024 coming up in Vegas, and our podcast. Well, first of all, I've been going to International Builder Show for over 30 years. I love to go there because when I want to get good technical information and make, most importantly, the personal contacts with the technical people, I can do that at the International Builder Show. They've got good technical representation for their products and systems. We're going to be the podcast at the booth for Huber C3320 on Wednesday and Thursday of the show. But I want to specifically feature on Wednesday, February 28th, we're going to be talking a bit about the Zips system R sheathing and playing that incredibly popular building science trivia where I get to beat the pants off of both Steve and Jake. Plus, if you stop by the booth, you might run into some friends from the podcast. If you'll be in Vegas, come by and say hello at the Huber booth, C3320. If you can't make it to Vegas, follow along on what's happening on Instagram at Huber Wood. You can also follow along with Instagram, of course, with the three of us. It's Stephen Basic Architect, it's Jake.Bruton, and Building Right Peter. And I'll just say that there's nothing instantaneous about my experience with my Instagram account. But for everything related to Huber Woods at IBS 2024, check out their website, huberwood.com/huber-IBS. And we're looking forward to seeing you at the show. Now on to the podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Unbuild It podcast. This week, I'm your host, Pete Yost, and I'm with my good friends, Jake Bruton and Steve Basic.
Howdy.
We got the moniker of good friends
good
this
friends.
Week.
Good friends. We're good friends.
Well, you know, someday you'll be great friends.
Good fellas. good fellas.
And I think what we're going to do is a couple more Q&A because these, I have to say.
Well, at least one.
We've been getting way more questions and all over the map. And they're a ton of fun to address. So,
I mean, just yesterday we got 6,426.
A couple of them were spam.
A couple of them were spam. But, you know, we call through them.
And Jake, you've got two up like your, spam, one or two up I your like sleeve.
Spam. I do.
Your sleeveys.
I mean. You're up your sleeveys.
So we're armies. So we're jumping right into it. Is that what
we are?
Let's go. Okay. Go for it.
So if you would like to send us a question, questions at Unbuild It Podcast is our email. I normally plug that at the end of the episode, but I will do it at the beginning this time so that everybody's aware. Pete answers most of these because Pete seems to have more free time on his hands, or he's more diligent with his email, or maybe it's just that if Steve and I know that if we wait,
he is the Pete oldest. Will
when your them. Only social media is the podcast and email, I have a lot more time.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I can just picture a world where Peter's just like, oh, good question. Clickety, clickety, clickety in his basement for 2 hours at a time. But I will say I enjoy it when you email your questions and I get to read Peter's response to your question before we talk about it here so that I feel informed enough to answer the question as well. The first question comes from Miles. Thanks for the excellent content.
Miles, is that the name or is he just far away?
It's with a Y, so we're going to assume that's okay. His name.
All right, so that's the name Miles. All right.
Thanks I'm just for the excellent.
Get an understanding of the perspective of the question here.
Thanks for the excellent and informative podcast.
Woo!
We just bought a 1911 farmhouse smack dab in the middle of Arkansas.
Get rid of it.
It features a pyramidal roof design with a dormer at the front and at the rear of the house. So I think we can already kind of picture this, right?
I'm seeing a four square.
Yep.
You like that, how he just jumped right to that conclusion.
Not quite sure how it's vented now at the peak, but it has vented soffits.
Yeah.
So we can come back to that.
It's not.
The soffit probably. Material has holes in it, I think is what would be appropriate to say there. What is the best strategy in my hot, humid climate to insulate and retard or dissipate heat and moisture for a roof design such as this without pulling the roof sheathing or the roofing? So magic is what he wants to have happen. Also, the very high-pitched roof gave the previous owner the idea to convert, you know where this is headed, the middle portion into a sheetrocked conditioned living space. It has wood slat ceilings at 12 foot high. 12 foot high and a steel roof, separate HVAC unit for the upstairs and downstairs, faced fiberglass bat currently in the ceiling joists, That's probably all that really matters. So let's start with the idea that the soffit is vented to somewhere, potentially, right?
Well, we know that airflow takes three things, a hole, a driving force, and another hole. And if you have vents at the soffit, but not at the ridge or the peak, you have one hole.
No, you have two holes because you have one on the windward side, one on the leeward side.
Well, that's true. You'd have to move it all the way.
So your driving force could push the air in and it could bleed out the other side because the code does allow, it bumps up to a 1 to 300 if you don't have a ridge and soffit, if you just have one of them. But and it's 1 to 150. Which one's more restrictive? 1 to 150 is more restrictive. You need an inch for every 150 foot, whereas if you have a hole on both sides, you only need an inch for every 300 feet. So it's 1 to 150 if it's not bottom and top, it's just bottom or just top.
However, we don't know since these are it's a hip roof or
pyramidal.
So that means all these bays are truncated.
Yep.
And all we know is that there's holes in the soffit, right?
So, I'm assuming the roof is vented now, right?
Well, so I think that's part of the problem. He has no idea whether it's a vented roof or not.
Well, I'm saying vented is in it's an unfinished attic. Let's say that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right. So you go up and it's just open.
So we know that the insulation is at the ceiling line. So this is a... We don't know if it's a vented attic, but we do know that it's a unconditioned attic space.
Okay. Yes. Before we go any further,
yep.
The remodeler in me hears 1911 farmhouse and vented soffit, and all I see is wood soffits that are solid covered with vented aluminum or something like that, where it's like that thing is not vented. It doesn't actually lead to anywhere. So number one is we have to verify that, right? Before anything else, because I don't know how many times I've taken down a piece of soffit and found, oh, well, it's not vented. It leads to a exposed rafter tail overhang that doesn't have any venting in it whatsoever.
Right.
That's the remodeler in me. I feel like we have to start there. Sorry.
Well, and even now that we started there, you know, I hate to say this, but there's a pretty simple way to test if you're getting any ventilation, and that's just take a theatrical fogger, stick it up into there and see what happens, particularly if the sun is hitting that metal roof.
Yeah.
I bet you when you do that, you're not going to find there's any airflow of any substance at all. But hey, pretty simple test to figure it out.
Well, so we're in Texas recording this week. A lot of the builders here don't do vented assemblies to begin with. And I think besides the fact that they don't do basements here, so they're looking for extra space, they use that storage space in the attic. The other reason that we don't see vented attics that commonly in this area is because of the McMansion multi-hip roof that wasn't going to vent anyway. So when you have that pyramidal shape that leads to a point that is not, that's blind for three quarters of the eave, like it doesn't connect to that because there's solid framing there. That's challenge number one, right? Like there's a good chance that even if the soffit were vented and it had a vintage ridge cap on it, there's two. I'm seeing it with a dormer on the front and a dormer on the back. There's literally like 2 to 4 joist bays that are actually going to communicate.
Correct. Yeah. And we know that somebody framed the attic to try to create a future living space up in that attic space. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why. And and if this is a hot, humid climate.
It's Arkansas. What climate zone is that?
Three. That would be climate zone three.
So that's mixed humid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lower section of Arkansas, two, but I think
it's But he's
three.
Smack dab in the middle of Arkansas. He's probably climate
zone That's even zone the three. Verbiage that he used.
Smack dab in the middle.
No kidding. Middle of Arkansas.
All right. So.
You're talking like an Arkansonian.
You can't be an Arkansonian for an Arkansas resident.
Oh, I thought he was talking about Noah and the big boat.
The Arkansas.
Noah and the big boat. This is how a kid who's not raised in any sort of religion. You know that kind Noah with his big boat. Asshole.
Can you guys be serious for a moment here?
This is what serious looks like.
Okay, can we agree that we need to know whether he wants or needs that space for claiming it for living? Because that's going to be a big part of
this.
But
I have yet another parameter.
Ooh.
Right? If it's a 1911 farmhouse, and it is most likely a 4 square, mm-hmm. it's probably a sizable, like, 30-foot square
yep.
foot house, which would suggest that it probably has a pretty steep roof, probably something
he did
like,
say it's pretty
like
steep.
A 9 or 10. So the question is that you could do a vented roof assembly there. You know, if say to the inside peak of the pyramid roof is at 15 or 16 feet and you go and put an 8-foot ceiling in, you've pretty much taken the attic. And even if you finished it, you still have the potential for a vented attic.
So do a truncated
above,
attic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. above attic space.
But if it comes, right? if and it's funny, I want to say pyramidal, and you guys are saying
pyramidal. But pyramidal. You're, but it's a resource.
How are we going to vent when we don't really have a ridge? We could do
the little mushroom caps or something like that.
We could do mushrooms, or we could
call them turtle vents.
Turtle vents.
Doesn't that look like a little turtle shell?
Each of the hips can be vented.
The two that don't have a dormer on them.
Oh, that's right. He's got those two dormers. Yeah. No, it's got to be either whirly birds or pull it all in.
I think one of the things that we're missing here, though, is he doesn't actually say that he's having any problems.
Mm-hmm.
He just Why don't wants we to just know. Continue to spend a bunch of money to condition that space and be done with it? I know that's not like the building science solution, but it's working. Why are we fiddling with it?
Okay, well, so we're making some assumptions. I think we would need to say, hey, you didn't mention that things are rotting around you.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you can pretty easily test to see if this thing is doing any venting at all. But if he doesn't have whirly birds and he doesn't have standing seam metal hip vents, pretty unlikely, then he's going to have to change the strategy and either really vent it or unvent it.
I don't think I've ever seen a hip vented roof.
The hip vent, I hadn't even crossed my mind. That is a genius solution. Because you could replace the hip caps.
You can. You can vent
without
those.
Pulling the rest of the roof off.
And then
and
each
that's
of those
substantially
vents.
Less expense than I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
It's just a ridge vent that's just running up the hip. That makes perfect sense.
You have to make sure you have the right kind of ridge vent, though, because you are saying I'm going to accept any wind-driven rain across that roof into the hip. So
they do make a pretty good one.
They need one that has that leading edge kind of.
And to Jake's point, I don't know if the geometry of the cap for the hip has to be different than it is for the ridge because of wind-driven rain. It could be that you need to make that a wider cover cap for the hips than you do the ridge. But they do manufacture both metal and asphalt hip vents.
Those must be pretty hip.
Yep, that just happened. You were here for that. That happened. That went
that
through his
stunning.
Head.
That was stunning.
He decided that was a good idea. And then he decided to follow through.
There's a whole step there that I'm going to question a little bit, but I like
anyway,
it.
Steve.
I like it.
I'm
Jake
about to do
Pete
my ramble.
Gonna like
I'm about
this.
To, I need a longer stem so I can do that ramble moment. You grab the. I grabbed the mic.
I cannot believe that I didn't think of it. I'm actually blown away by that, Pete.
I can't believe I didn't think of that.
Of course.
We've done it.
Of course you do. To him, it was self-evident.
Of course.
It was a revelation.
Remember, if you haven't listened to it in the last podcast, I gave a visual on Jake's intelligent position. So if you put people hand in hand from New York City to L.A., New York being the smartest and then decreasing, Jake's somewhere west of Las Vegas.
And of course,
and now he's
Steve's
acting surprised.
Standing in Boston.
No, I'm in New York City. I'm the start of the line.
Oh,
no,
I thought the launch would never start in Boston.
I would never.
This is totally
off topic. You know why? I wouldn't want to be the first person. Because the smartest person in the world doesn't know everything. They know where to find the answers.
No, the problem is they're only holding one hand. And that's just sad.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is revolutionary.
Pete would feel like he's missing out on people touching.
Wow.
People touching made it weird.
Think about it. Everybody's out there holding hands, and you're like, I got one free one.
Wow.
Sad.
I'm not going to say it.
This is your picture of the whole country. This is off topic completely.
We've been off topic for like 5 minutes.
I read an article in the last 2 months about how 80% of the United States population basically lives east of Omaha.
Hmm.
And I had never really thought about it or considered it. I know population density goes down, but I'd never thought like most of the people live.
It's also something like 90% of all the planet's life lives within 50 miles of the coast.
Interesting. Totally off topic. Okay, so.
It's crazy.
We're going to say verify. Trust verify. Me, verify.
Check out whether what kind of venting, if any, are you getting?
And the theatrical fog machine is something that lots of builders should own because there are lots of uses for it. And this time of year, early fall, you can get one from Home Depot that has Halloween decorations on it for like $25.
Plug for the guy. Now the guy who
Rose.
The guy who owns just recently semi-retired
Gary.
Gary, I can't think of his last name. Gary Nelson. His puffer. He has a new puffer because that's a lot cheaper, and you could, you know,
for recognizing
that amount of smoke in a situation like this might be tough.
It might be. Garden Party,
Gary Nelson. No.
Anyway, that
when do
if you want to buy a theatrical fogger or borrow one,
TEC is manufacturing what looks like a turkey baster with an e-cigarette yammed into it.
Yep.
Which is pretty much what it is, too.
It is. That's how it started.
That you can puff little wisps of smoke out. It's a great little inspection tool. You can see little air leaks on windows
and
or air barriers.
And it might work in this case.
And it might work in this case.
Yeah.
To do that type of testing, we need real solar.
Right. Drive.
Mm-hmm. Like, and that's a cool thing because then you get to see what's happening on one side versus the other side, north side versus south side or something like that.
Yep.
In this instance, I would tell, and I already forgot.
And you know what's funny,
Miles?
Jake, yeah. What's funny about this, too, is that I wrote an answer back to Miles and I didn't think about using a theatrical fogger to test the venting. So hey, Miles, I'm sorry, but that's what happens when you get three brains.
Incomplete answers is what you get from Pete.
That's true.
I would also say don't hesitate to, like, don't forget to test the sides with the dormers, too, just to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm going to recommend for the age of this house that you have somebody inside watching as well. Because chances are it shows up inside before it shows up outside on a house like
this. And if you're going to do it with a fogger, make sure the fire department knows.
Not sure if I've ever notified the fire department.
Well, the consequence of not notifying them is sort of
getting
dire.
To meet firemen.
Yeah. Well, you know, they know all about theatrical fogging because when they're training their firemen, they fill houses with smoke so that they're trying to navigate without being able to see. So they know all about fog.
There was a fire truck in my neighborhood recently, and I walked outside to see what was going on.
Wow.
And the lady that lives next door to me was standing outside, and I said, "What's going on?" She said, "I don't know, but they're firemen." And I was just like, oh, she's legit out here because she's waiting on these cute firemen to come talk to her.
Is that why you were out there, too?
It made me very happy that she was just like, I don't give a crap about the neighbors. I want to see the firemen.
That's great.
Okay. Let's see. I think we've probably covered Miles's question. Do we have enough time for another one? I think we do.
We'll have to be brief.
Okay.
Briefs.
I built a house last year for my wife and I, and trying to be as energy efficient as possible, went for a heat pump water heater, Rheem Performance Platinum.
Ooh.
It is a small house, 1,400 square feet. Let's call it a reasonable house if it's just the two of you. And was concerned about the noise, but figured we could live with it. Due to venting needs, due to the venting needs of the unit, I have an air gap below the door to the mechanical room. It has to connect to other space to be able to steal heat, right? And it's ducted into the vented attic. I figured since it exhausts dehumidified air into the attic, it would not cause any issues. I'm pausing there for a reason.
Dramatic pause.
Yep. This depressurizing of the house is an issue that I didn't think about. I'm in Montana, so ooh, pulling air from out of the house is not an option. Is there a way to set up this type of water heater in an airtight house that is better than that could just be a different route? That's Greg's question.
How about put it in the basement?
1,400 square feet. It might not have a basement.
Probably in Montana, I'm kind of thinking it probably has certainly a basement. Good. Yeah.
I mean, they are one of the first things you said when he said, and what about the noise? I'm saying, yeah, this is a guy that probably put one in a closet somewhere.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go ahead. Sorry.
I think we have to start by saying what makes us pause when we read this question?
Well, first of all, it's either inside the building or it's outside the building. And of course, in Montana, it's got to be inside the building.
Yep.
And I mean, think about it. It's a heat pump. So what is it doing? It's gathering the heat out of the air. It's making the air colder. The volume in a mechanical closet is nowhere even close.
No, you need like 750 square feet.
Cubic feet.
Or is it? Right? No, but it's, no. I think it's 750 square feet. And they,
for the, it's, okay. Yeah, so it's eight times that.
Per like 50 enough. Gallon water heater to have enough energy in the air to service yep. this thing.
I worked on a project that was a passive house up in Middlebury, Vermont. And the homeowner had let some, Middlebury College is a private school. So this professor came in and he rented from this guy. So they were renting it, but they took the heat pump water and closed the door to that room. And they couldn't figure out why, you could store things rather than your refrigerator. They had all kinds of moisture problems in that room because it was, 80% relative humidity and 33 degrees or something. It was nuts. But anyway, yeah, you have to rob that from a pretty big volume of air so you don't get really, super cold areas. And you cannot connect and depressurize that space. It's got to be all the way in.
But I think that square footage, while it's not a requirement per se, but it definitely helps with the acoustical dissipation of noise.
Oh, yeah, as well as the...
Right, just having it in a large room, not... Dan Roy's house, we put one in. It made noise. He bought foam panels, and like we had to turn his mechanical closet into a music room.
So...
Because you would hear it humming.
So did that space get really cold? Because
it was cooler.
Yeah.
It was cooler. I mean, I still remember the very first time I was introduced to a heat pump water heater. I remember walking in the basement. It's like 90 degrees outside, probably like 75% RH. I walked in the basement and it felt like I walked into a cooler.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, this is nice down here. And the guy's like, I'm going to get one of these, put one of these water heaters in my living room.
You know, my sister and brother-in-law have a new heat pump water heater. They used to have a gas water heater in their basement. It's a pretty big basement with a lot of stuff in it. And I said, it's going to make it colder down there, both winter and summer. And so I put a data logger in there to get a sense of how much it dropped. Being
related to Pete must be riveting.
But I've never downloaded the file.
That was the best follow-up sentence to that statement ever. I went
for collect data, but never look at it.
I put 14 data loggers in the house. It's one of these days I'm going to go back and actually get the info.
I think they said it dropped the temperature about 3 degrees or so in the basement. But they have a big basement with a lot of stuff in it. So there's a lot of BTUs hanging around, or thermal mass, I should say.
A lot of
BTUs. Okay, so we're pushing inside air outside. Even though that air is chilled relative to the air inside the house and dehumidified relative
right.
to the...
Right.
That doesn't mean that the air in the attic doesn't have an incredible amount of available moisture.
Hard to say, but the depressurization of the living space is a bad idea.
Right? And so we could be dumping air into the attic that could be cold enough to be below dew point as well, right? At some point. Maybe not in Montana. If you're doing the same thing in Louisiana, absolutely, right?
Yeah. Well, but if the air that's going up into the attic is had moisture removed.
It's cold and dry.
We need to know what the dew point of that air is. Yeah, sure. And it so could.
You, you
it
could be having problems from that. Probably the idea that we're just depressurizing the house is also just a...
Yeah, I mean, there's so many which ways that this is not a good installation.
Unbalanced ventilation.
Yeah.
So how do we do this different? If it's not, if we don't want it in the basement, if we don't have a basement, if we don't want it in the room, is there a way to do this?
Well, we can do your split system.
He actually notes that at the end of his question.
The question that I've always had is, why is there a net gain in efficiency if you're robbing BTUs that then the furnace in the winter?
Put back.
Dan Cautley and others at the what was the Energy Center.
How Wisconsin, is Dan?
He's great. He's pretty much retired.
I missed Dan.
Anyway, the important thing is that they did a detailed study of three different buildings, I think, and there was net overall efficiency gain by having a heat pump water heater in the basement where there is also either a boiler or a furnace. And they very carefully watched how the boiler or the furnace was, you know, leading to those BTUs being pulled out of the air for the heat pump water heater. And although the overall efficiency gain was small, it was still consistent. So the answer to the question, I always thought there's no efficiency gain there at all. You're taking BTUs from one place and using them in another place. But there is an overall efficiency gain, although it's more modest than you'd think.
Okay, so he kind of wraps it. Greg kind of wraps his question by saying, like, I didn't realize about the sand-in unit until after we were done.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why Steve said that's the solution. We kill the noise. We kill the interior temperature problems.
So when you say the sand-in unit.
Yep. So all that happens is we take the heat pump function and we put it outside in a cassette that looks like your mini-split heat pump. Mm-hmm. The water runs outside. The water is conditioned outside and then returns in and is in a holding tank. So at my house, I have a 83-gallon tank that shares a wall with my bedroom. We don't hear a thing. It doesn't affect the environment of the house in any way. All of the stealing of temperature happens outside. And before anybody goes, yeah, he's in Montana, I believe that Montana is very close. Boy, my brain just flaked. Is it latitude or longitude?
Latitudinally.
It's probably close to Boston.
Very close to Boston or Japan, where these are used nonstop. Wow.
You took this on the other side of the world. But when you
said the sand, and that's also the one that has CO2 as a refrigerant.
It does. Right?
And that allows you to do a whole different compression ratio thing. Mm-hmm. So you can pull more BTUs out if you're really ramping up how much compression you use to get the BTUs out.
Yep.
So
that's and the square footage requirement goes away.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the outside is the outside and there's a lot of it.
Cool. I had not thought of that as a potential solution.
Hey, that's what we're here for.
My 8-year-old daughter and I had a 15-minute conversation this week or last week.
She's teaching
about
you again?
About how it works. She was explaining it to me. Because we were walking the dog and we walked past it.
Is that a literal walking the dog or physically? Never heard the term walking the dog?
We were physically walking our dog.
Okay, so there's a dog in the picture.
And which I would say is we literally were walking our dog. Okay. So you'll have to explain that reference to me. Past it. And she said, why is that making cold air? Mm. And so we stood there and talked about it. I will say also I tried to explain to my three children surfactants at dinner the other night, and about halfway through my 8-year-old went, nerd. And it hurt my feelings enough that I quit explaining how a surfactant worked and I gave up on it. I was pissed off that I got bullied by an 8-year-old or by an 11-year-old, but he was right. He wasn't wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
these precious moments.
You both probably heard of Murphy's Law.
Yes.
You ever hear of Cole's Law?
No.
Thinly sliced cabbage and mayo.
That one I did see coming. That's the first one that I've seen coming.
Wow. Yeah.
That's okay.
I don't think
you
saw it.
I was still amused by it.
I think he's lying.
Okay. That is the last thing.
Have our listeners suffered through enough with this particular episode?
Okay, so a polar bear walks into a bar, says, I'll have a rum and a Coke. Bartender says, what's with the paws? Said, I don't know. I've had them since birth.
Yeah. There we go.
That wow, happened. See, it's just like pretty far down in the bad joke.
The writers love it. If you love and you want to hear more of my jokes, write to
questions at Unbuild It Podcast. It's also where you can send a question if you have a question. Like I mentioned earlier, chances are Pete will answer it and Steve and I will read his answer and decide whether or not he's right or wrong, but not participate in the conversation in any way. If you are listening on an audio platform or audio only platform today, please take a moment, go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. That helps the algorithm help other folks find our podcast and us grow our audience, which is the goal here. We want more people to hear this. That way we can continue to do this.
You know, I think if we could get 10,000 of our followers to make a sign that says, listen to the Unbuild It Podcast and just walk around for a day, like in major cities. Holding up the sign.
I wonder if that would be any impact whatsoever.
They would all get arrested because they didn't have a permit.
Just the peanut gallery's laughing out loud to that one.
I'm trying to help our situation here. That's you guys, you know, I'm trying to come up with ideas here.
Like, he's an idea man.
I'm an idea man. Saying. I'm an idea man. And you guys are like squashers. Like, so hard. Going back to my eagle. I'm going to fly higher. Get rid of the crows.
If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe. And some of you are watching on the newest platform in which the podcast is available, the buildshownetwork.com, which is video and audio format. So you get to see how much we have disdain for each other on our faces during the podcast, if that's what you're into. But we're happy to be part of the
Build Show Network. All about love, baby. All about love.
We're happy to be part of the Build Show Network as a podcast team. Steve and I have been making videos for the Build Show Network since
not together. We're just like separately building video. I just please
since
just
2019. Sure. This is Pete's first stint on the Build Show Network, so we're happy to have him on.
First, awesome
part of the network.
It's a first stint. You're a first stint today. Just I like saying.
That. We make a fall trip to Austin to record the podcast, and it's going to be nearly 100 degrees this week. So, welcome to the team, Pete. Till next time, thanks for watching.
Goodbye, y'all.
So long.
Have a good day.